This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tremel Gomes.
We'll hold people in government accountable. We'll protect taxpayer dollars, and we'll ensure that Floridians from all walks of life have that open field and fair chance to realize their dreams.
Governor-elect Ron DeSantis officially becomes the 46th governor of the state of Florida. A big battle is expected this legislative session with the powerful gun lobby against a movement to change oversight of Florida's concealed weapons program from the Department of Ag to the Department of Law Enforcement.
291 permits were issued to individuals that were ineligible to have them, making our communities less safe. And I believe that that oversight lies and should lie with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement.
That's Democratic Senator Lauren Book, who will also discuss the Senate chamber's new policy on sexual harassment following last year's scandals.
The change is a good one and a step in the right direction.
As some of Florida's former felons prepare to register to vote this week, a recent study shows the massive impact of those behind bars.
Half of all adults living in the United States have had a family member, an immediate family member, spend time behind bars. That's 113 million people who have experienced incarceration in their families.
All that and so much more coming up on episode 161 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. It's inauguration week. Governor-elect Ron DeSantis will officially become Governor DeSantis with a series of festive events minus an inaugural parade through the streets of Tallahassee. I'm actually disappointed about that part. It would have been great to see DeSantis interact with the public, get a chance to connect authentically with the people. Most of the other events are stuffier and are catering mostly to the well-connected, including powerful corporations and interest groups. Listen to this throwback, courtesy of the Florida Memory Project.
The parade today is a giant spectacle of sights and sounds. From all over the state, bands, floats, and pretty girls come to salute the new governor and the first lady.
You can see inaugurations past, including the inauguration of Sidney Katz in 1917, where this clip is from. But let's fast forward to Governor Rick Scott. I served as a pool reporter for radio stations. This is the sound of the Suwannee Band playing Suwannee River, while Scott, First Lady Anne, and then Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll walked the streets, shaking hands with the people. All I'm saying is imagine canceling the inaugural ball and keeping the parade. Just a thought. What do you think? Leave a comment on this episode via Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Rotunda Podcast. DeSantis, at 40 years old, will be sworn into office on Tuesday to become Florida's 46th governor. On Monday, there is a Women Transforming Florida tribute breakfast featuring Florida's next lieutenant governor, Jeanette Nunez, the highest-ranking Hispanic woman elected in Florida history, and incoming First Lady Casey DeSantis. That will be followed by a bold vision for brighter future luncheon with legislative leaders. There will also be an event honoring service members. Tuesday kicks off with a prayer breakfast at Florida A&M University before the swearing-in ceremony on the steps of the historic Capitol building, and will continue with an address to legislators and cabinet officials in the Capitol Rotunda. DeSantis will make a speech that will focus on his governing priorities and on a call to unify the state, according to Susie Wiles, who led his campaign and now heads his transition. It concludes with a ball at the Donald L. Tucker Civic Center here in Tallahassee. So a festive week it will be around Florida's Capitol. Also being sworn into their jobs is returning Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patronis, Agriculture Commissioner-elect Nikki Freed, and Attorney General-elect Ashley Moody. And they all make up the next cabinet. And here is a big rotunda welcome to the new administration and all other elected officials throughout the state. This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Find us at rotundapodcast.com. also on various newspaper websites and the state's most influential political blogs and websites. To stream this program outside, of course, of your favorite podcast app. Soon after the peaceful transition of power from Rick Scott to Ron DeSantis, it's full speed ahead. The business of governing the state begins. To update a story that rocked the Capitol last session, sexual misconduct allegations forcing several resignations, including the once powerful Senator Jack Latvala. The Senate agreed to pay $900,000 to settle a complaint filed by high-ranking legislative aide Rachel Perrin Rogers against then-Senator Latvala. Spokeswoman for Senate President Bill Galvano said they believed it was best to settle to avoid negative impact to the parties and mounting legal fees. A question many are wondering is why are taxpayers being left to foot the bill instead of the individuals involved? Well, that's because Rogers filed a federal discrimination complaint alleging gender discrimination and that the Senate retaliated against her. It's being reported that Rogers will be responsible for paying legal fees out of the settlement being placed in a trust account. State Senator Lauren Book, a Democrat from Plantation, sponsored legislation to combat sexual harassment during the 2018 session. The legislature failed to reach agreement, but the Senate updated its policy that, for the first time, specifies and prohibits sexual harassment of employees and lobbyists. It allows the Senate president to initiate a formal complaint against a senator that could lead to his or her being kicked out of the chamber. In a recent conversation with Senator Book, I wanted to get her reaction to the policy change and to, of course, talk politics.
Yes, are you as excited as I am for this upcoming legislative session?
You know, I don't know if there is anybody that is more excited than me to get back up there and get working on really new and exciting pieces of policy. And, you know, we missed you. So we're excited to get back up there and get back to work.
We saw that there are going to be new process for handling complaints of sexual harassment. What are your thoughts on the change coming from leadership in the Senate?
You know, I think that the change is a good one and a step in the right direction. I think that anytime there are clearly laid out policies, it helps make a really difficult and uncomfortable process more understandable and anticipated. And I think that those are really important things. And there will always be room for improvement. There will always be ways to enhance the process and be more survivor-centric, if you will. And so I'm so pleased that Senate leadership is moving in those directions and are continuing to have open dialogue. This is the beginning, not the end. And anytime you create a policy and that's where you think it's going to end, that's never the case. We're always honing and improving. And I know that that is kind of where we're going.
So Book is already looking ahead to the March 5th start of the legislative session.
You know, we have some other issues, a bill that I think it's 108, moving the concealed weapons permitting to Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So there are a bunch, no shortage of issues, and I'm excited to get back up there and start working on them.
With the filing of Senate Bill 108 that would shift Florida's concealed firearms licensing program to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, a move away from the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
This is a bill that I have been contemplating for a long time. I actually submitted it to drafting July 18th, to be exact, of 2018, because at the end of the day, it didn't matter to me whether the new incoming commissioner was a Democrat or Republican. The more important matter is oversight and making sure that permits that are issued are being issued to individuals who are able to have them. And we know from the investigation that occurred, 291 permits were issued to individuals that were ineligible to have them, making our communities less safe. And I believe that that oversight lies and should lie with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement.
Now, we're seeing a little resistance, most notably from the National Rifle Association lobbyists here in Florida, advocating for that oversight to remain in an elected official capacity, like with another cabinet member putting forward the chief financial officer. What are your thoughts on why that may not be a good idea?
Well, I think that this is another way that we're trying to shift the deck, right? Because why not leave it with the agricultural commissioner and consumer services? Why would we want to shift it to another office with a Republican elected official? I think that that speaks for itself. Why not leave it where it is if it's about leaving it with an elected official? I, again, believe that this function, the oversight, belongs with law enforcement. And I think that suggestion of shifting to another elected official with a different letter after its name makes no sense.
Lastly on this, I see the incoming Ag Commissioner, Nikki Fried. She seems to be in line with seeing the shift to law enforcement. Have you had any talks with her? Have you come to a meeting of the minds of figuring out the best way of doing this? Any issue at all with the incoming Ag Commissioner?
I have not yet spoken with the incoming commissioner just yet about the proposal. I know that this is something that the commissioner is supportive of, and I look forward to having dialogue with her as her transition team is assembled and we move down this process. I look forward to those conversations and working it through the process and having the dialogue and hoping that we are able to move this to a place where we're keeping our communities safe. And again, just simply ensuring that individuals who are entitled to those permits can have them and those who are not, don't. And that is, for me, the most important thing as we work to keep our communities safe, our schools safe. And I think that I'm thrilled that we have, Commissioner Fried where she is, that she's going to be there to ensure, if it does remain there, that the oversight that was lacking isn't going forward.
That's Senator Lauren Book, a child advocate, former classroom teacher, and she is also a best-selling author. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, bringing you stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Each week, this program is supported by listeners like you. Please send your generous contributions to rotundapodcast.com. It helps us to expand our reach. This program is featured on newspaper websites throughout the state and across the country, and we couldn't do it without your support. Follow us on social media at Rotunda Podcast and visit rotundapodcast.com, where there's a convenient donate button to make your automatic generous contributions to this program. Be an active listener by also sending us your tips and story ideas. And as always, thanks for your support. Nearly two-thirds of Floridians voted to approve the largest expansion of voting rights since the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Florida was one of four states preventing felons from voting after they completed their sentences. The successful passage of Amendment 4 during the 2018 midterms automatically restores voting rights to people who have completed their full sentences, except those convicted of murder or sexual offense. More than 1 million Floridians will have the ability to regain their rights to vote on January 8th. However, Governor DeSantis wants to hold off until the legislature gets to review. That prompted voting rights groups to cry foul, accusing DeSantis of voter suppression. So the issue is quite controversial. Even former Governor and Congressman Charlie Crist plans to go with former felons on Tuesday to help them register to vote. Anyway, in the midst of all the back and forth, a recent study from Cornell University shows nearly 1 in 2 adults in the United States has seen an immediate family member go to jail or prison for at least one night. The research was designed by Forward.us, a nonprofit launched in 2013 by Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg to advocate looser immigration laws and criminal justice reform. Here's my recent conversation with Zoe Towns, Senior Director of Criminal Justice Reform at Forward.us, who says they've been keeping close tabs on Florida's Amendment 4 debate.
So we've been watching it incredibly closely. It's very exciting to see that vote come down the way it did with such resounding support for second chances and for restoration. It's interesting, this research I think helps explain some of that overwhelming support for Amendment 4. You saw people from both sides of the aisle come out and get to the polls with a lot of energy around this restoration effort. And I think that's because we've gotten to the point in this country where people are not voting on criminal justice because it's a far-off policy, but because criminal justice and the kinds of policies that we have at the state and federal level are impacting people that we know, whether it's family members, whether it's us, whether it's community members. These are not topics that are strange to us. These are intimate, and they're kind of about us at this point.
With the findings showing 1 in 7 adults has had an immediate family member behind bars for at least a year, and those numbers are higher for Black, Native Americans, and low-income individuals, what does criminal justice reform look like? Or what should be done with this information?
We believe it should serve as a wake-up call, you know, one of many wake-up calls. We hope people are already awake, but certainly not energized enough for the fight that we have ahead. We still have 2.3 million people incarcerated right now in this country. We've got 113 million people who are impacted and harmed because their family members have been incarcerated in this country. What we've seen over the course of the last decade is many states and localities and even the federal government have begun to reduce the number of people that they incarcerate and that they hold in jail or prison. But the numbers are coming down at far too slowly, and the reforms that we're seeing, while encouraging, are far too small for the task ahead. And so we just have a long way to go before our policies match our aspirations when it comes to reforming criminal justice and also, importantly, supporting the families that have been left in its wake. There's been encouraging movement from organizers and advocates across the country, reforms to pretrial detention, like bail, you know, ending cash bail and reducing the population of people that we hold before trial. These are sentencing reforms. These are expanding parole, about helping, making sure that people can earn time to get, you know, off of their sentences sooner. We've got a lot of work to do to begin to sort of right-size and downsize this incredibly bloated criminal justice system.
That's Zoe Townsend, a criminal justice reform expert at Forward.us. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Senator Lauren Book, the archiving system at the Florida Memory Project, and Zoe Townsend at Forward.us. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on your favorite social media platform. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. And be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.